Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. President Barack Obama advances his effort to normalize relations with Cuba by announcing his intent to visit the once Cold War adversary. Let's assess public attitudes with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Well, among other things, we're learning it's easier to get to Cuba with restrictions being lifted on airlines seeking to travel there. What does the public feel about this softening of relations?
Well, Americans, for the first time in our history, Dave, of asking about Cuba, are more favorable than unfavorable. Here are the data. This is our February update where we ask Americans to rate a whole long list of countries. And by the way, Canada is the country Americans like the most. 54% of Americans have a favorable opinion of Cuba. That's the first time in our history, as I mentioned, that we've ever had a majority who had a favorable opinion. When we ask about it in this format back in 1996, the first time it was 10% with a favorable opinion. Back in 1976, 79, 1980, we asked about it using a different scale, and it was very much negative back in the Castro days and so forth. So clearly we've had a significant turnaround in Americans' views of Cuba. But I would point out, it's still political. You know, our two Cuban ancestry presidential candidates, Cruz and Rubio, have come out more negatively about Obama's proposed trip to Cuba. Democrats, 73% are favorable to Cuba nationwide, but among Republicans, it's only 34%. So like so much else in our world today, Dave, views of Cuba are highly political.
But across political stripe, critics counter that the president is rewarding a dictatorial government that infringes on human rights. Does that resonate with Democrats?
Well, we did not ask specifics about Cuba. All we can tell you is that almost three-quarters, 73% of Democrats nationwide say, hey, they have a favorable opinion of the country of Cuba.
Hey, Frank, let's park the Republican race to the side for a moment and take up tomorrow's Nevada caucuses.
Yeah, very interesting. One interesting difference between Nevada and New Hampshire and Iowa is there's a much higher Hispanic population there. I think about 28% of the overall population is Hispanic, so that is very much important to the Democratic candidates. And, of course, the next voting after that will come with the Democratic primaries in South Carolina, and almost half of voters in the 2008 South Carolina primary were African-American, a very heavily black state down there in the South. So ethnic differences make a big deal. Both Sanders and Clinton have been actively courting non-white Democratic voters. And our data show there's some huge differences nationwide. African-Americans, very loyal to Hillary Clinton. They have a more positive opinion of Hillary Clinton than they do of Bernie Sanders, no question about that. But among Hispanics, Sanders' biggest issue is he's an unknown to almost half of Hispanics nationwide when we interview them. These are Hispanic Democrats, by the way. I say they don't know enough about Sanders to rate him, so that's his problem. But among those who do rate Sanders, he actually gets a somewhat more positive rating than does Hillary Clinton among Hispanic Democrats. So that's an issue for her as well, trying to hold on or shore up her support, whereas Sanders just needs to get better known among Hispanics.
As if the fireworks generated by the political campaigns weren't enough, now we're talking about replacing Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Has the public had much time to study the issue?
Well, we haven't been able to interview Americans since the death in Texas of Justice Scalia, but we did last summer ask Americans what they knew about or thought about Scalia, John Roberts, and Anthony Kennedy, three justices. They all came in about the same. 44% of Americans at that point last summer, obviously before his death, didn't know enough about Scalia to be able to rate him, but about the same number couldn't rate the Chief Justice, John Roberts. So a lot of Americans are hazy on who these people are. Their images, Scalia's image was split kind of down the middle among those who did have an opinion.
Are they also hazy on the strategy of either nominating that candidate now or waiting until the next president is elected?
We don't have data now asking Americans whether they support the idea of a nomination going through or waiting to the next president. Obviously, that would be extremely political. Democrats would hope for a nomination and a confirmation of whoever President Obama would come up with. Republicans obviously would like to wait until the new president gets into office. They're hoping that would be a Republican. Then, of course, it would be a much more conservative justice who would be nominated. One thing we do know is the image of the Supreme Court is highly political. Everything's political. The last time we asked it, 45% of Americans had a favorable opinion, approved of the Supreme Court, 50% disapproved. And by the way, that's down. But Democrats, 67% approval of the court, and only 26% of Republicans approve. What that tells us is that Republicans are very negative about some of the recent decisions that have come out of the court, and therefore that's why they're so eager, as it were, to postpone a new justice being appointed until what they hope would be a GOP president in office in January 2017.
Has it always been so political?
No, it has not. Like a lot of issues, like global warming, the Supreme Court's not always been this political. But I should say that it becomes political after a controversial decision. When we've tracked the Supreme Court, it'll be positive and go down. But the positivity on the part of Republicans or Democrats nationally can shift depending on whether the decision that is handed down tended to favor one or the other. For example, Democrats were less positive about the Supreme Court back after the decision came down with Bush versus Gore, which of course allowed George W. Bush to become president back in 2000-2001.
New Jersey residents now enjoy the full attention of their governor, Chris Christie, who relinquished his aspirations to become the Republican nominee for president. And in his new budget, he promised no new taxes. And I'm sure that's especially good news to New Jerseyans.
I think it should be, Dave. We've done a lot of analysis of state-by-state views of one state across the 50 states of the union. We ask Americans, if you could move, would you? Connecticut and New Jersey are the highest of any state in the union. 46% of residents of New Jersey say if they could, they would move.
For that reason, Frank?
Well, that's my point. We then did a lot of analysis, and we got tax data from the Tax Foundation, where they had combined income, property, and sales tax, and we grouped all the states. And sure enough, we find correlationally, residents in the states that have the highest tax burden are significantly more likely to want to move, tell us they would want to move, than states which have a lower tax burden. So we think there's some causality there. And in addition to that, we ask Americans to tell us whether they were satisfied with how much tax they paid. New Jersey was at the bottom of the list of all 50 states. In other words, New Jersey residents are more likely to complain about taxes than anywhere else in the union. So you put all that together, and it certainly suggests that the potential is there, if it hasn't already been realized, for out-migration from New Jersey because of the perception of the tax burden.
Now, the governor did allow himself one exception. He hasn't ruled out raising gasoline taxes to help fund the state's transportation trust fund. What do New Jersey residents prefer, no tax or better roads?
You know, that's an interesting question. We have not measured that in New Jersey per se, but we do know that New Jersey residents aren't all that positive on the roads, because in our state-by-state polling last year, we asked Americans, how satisfied are you with the roads and highways in your state? North Dakota residents are the most happy of all with their roads. 81% say they are satisfied. Rhode Island's dead last at 31%. Michigan's second from last. But you go up the list, and New Jersey is 12th from the bottom. To be specific, 57% of New Jersey residents are satisfied with their roads, which puts them well below average. However, Dave, what about Pennsylvania? What about the potholes in Pennsylvania? Well, Pennsylvania is eighth from the bottom. Only 49% of Pennsylvania residents are satisfied with the condition of roads and highways in Pennsylvania, and that's worse than New Jersey. So of the three states in our immediate area, New Jersey's not doing well, but Pennsylvania, at least based on what residents tell us, has a real problem with the quality and condition of its roads and highways.
And so bring Delaware into the equation.
They're 14th from the top, so well above average. To be specific, 70% of Delaware residents told us they were satisfied with the condition of roads and highways. And again, let me repeat, New Jersey, that number was 57, and in Pennsylvania, it was 49. So you can see the difference there.
Although North Dakota at the top, I'm going to surmise that far fewer miles are driven across that state than in busy New Jersey.
I think that's an excellent point, Dave, because the other states where people are happy with their roads tend to be ones that are out in the wide open spaces of the West. Wyoming follows North Dakota, then Utah, then Kansas, South Dakota, Idaho, Nevada, Montana. Those are the states where residents are most positive about the condition of roads and highways. And I think you're absolutely right. There aren't as many, for one thing, a lot of wide open spaces out there, and certainly not the daily kind of grind that we would find around here on our freeways and expressways and interstate highways.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newswork Tonight.